Jace Johnson, is he, what's his timeline for incorporation here into the team, and will he be able to play this season?
Well, by rule, he could play.
Well, I guess I should ask, do you see him potentially playing this season?
Well, I mean, that's where we have some flexibility. I don't think he wants to commit to that. I don't think we want to commit to that. It's a process, as is the case with a lot of freshmen. A lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement, and then you're in the environment and you go, wait a minute, this is a little bit harder than I thought. So I think, you know, from a mental point of view, Jace is probably really excited. He's been sitting out a little while, so I'm guessing he's chomping at the bit, but he gets to do a little workout with us today for the first time. And, you know, it's timing through the Christmas break with minimal games. And we want to do the right thing for him and the right thing for our program. So I think the most important thing to remember is that this has given him a jump on a freshman year, assuming we don't play him this year. So, you know, it's nothing that we're committing to. He's just going to try to learn some of the offense, get his feet wet around here. But it's going to be a lot mental to begin with, I think, for him as we get it going. So, family's here. They're spending some Christmas time here, and it's pretty cool. It's not a normal time, you know, to have an arrival. So it's a unique situation for us, and we're just thrilled to have him on our team.
You previously talked about how, you know, this matchup against Duke was something you weren't really looking forward to, and had to come back and say that you agreed to it. Now, in retrospect, you know, given the experience, given the win, I mean, how does this transition for the team moving forward? And is this something now that you're looking at? Maybe it was a good experience in general, just to be able to go and play Duke.
Well, I, it's easy to play armchair quarterback and fortune teller and say, you know, it was really a perfect scenario. Our kids had a fantastic time. Family was there. I couldn't believe how many fans we had. Had an awesome get together on Friday night at a beautiful place on the top floor of the Mandarin Hotel with a bunch of boosters, and I spoke to the group there and said the only thing that makes it perfect is if we win, and we did. So it's easy to say, oh yeah, you know, but for so many reasons it was the right thing to do, and as we were on that trip, I felt more and more that was the case, to get out to play a team of that nature. And then certainly you don't get a chance to play in MSG very often. And, you know, the most important thing is I didn't think the game would kill us. I was really hopeful that we could be competitive. We laid an egg with Miami. We laid an egg with Wichita. We had a terrific week of practice and stayed competitive and managed to win the game. And just as I don't think the game would have killed us had we lost, the game doesn't save our season because we won, you know. And it gets back to the old adage that I've said for 5 years, is you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. Last Monday, when there was no one here for our little press conference with a little bit of snow, and we just had got whipped by the Shockers, the world didn't come to an end. And, you know, we had a kind of a nasty little film session, but we weren't as bad as we thought we were. You know, and you roll in here this Monday and we're not as good as we think we are. So to me, it's about a grind that you kind of stay on a daily basis. You look what's next. You keep, you know, it was a great win, a great program win, not only for our university, for our basketball program, for our state. You know, you don't get an opportunity on ESPN. So there's so many things, you know, that trickle down. But at the end of the day, it's a game. And we've got to take the proper momentum from that game and have one game here at Delaware State tomorrow, and then we'll have one tune up before the new year and start league. That's the second season. So that's probably the most important thing, is that we remain focused on what it is we need to get better at.
You mentioned that with non-conference winding down and whatnot. How would you assess how the team has performed so far in the season?
Well, I think it's been a little bit of an adjustment for all of us. You know, we've got some guys that were new to what we're doing, specifically Lorenzo and Gabe, continue to find their way with the junior college transition. You know, I think perimeter-wise, those guys have a lot more to offer, and they know it. The Brandons and the Dakaris and the Isaiahs and even Bricott and Kuz, as far as shooting from three, hasn't been stellar. And, you know, previously you'd say we were one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country. So I think we've adjusted to maybe no DeLon. We're going to have to earn those threes in a different way, open up the rim for us through more of a collective idea, because we don't have that one guy that's going to go make it happen, although Lorenzo's certainly making great progress with his 9 assists the other night. You know, and defensively, we're not happy with where we are. The last two games, we really, I think, recommitted and dedicated ourselves to playing some defense. It wasn't fun to hear that we were last in the Pac-12 in defensive field goal percentage, and I don't think that's something that our guys are proud of. But truth be known, we've probably spent a little more time early on our offense. And so that kind of serves you right. And then the last couple of weeks, a lot more defense, and our percentages are going down. So, you know, kind of a refocus, I think. But it's a hard schedule as you assess. You know, we're number one in the Pac-12 in terms of strength of schedule and RPI. So we didn't take it lightly, and we've challenged ourselves in a number of different environments, and we managed to win the majority of those games. So from a wins and losses, as you measure yourself, I think we're pleased with where we are, but we've still got a long way to go in terms of some of the fine-tuning and making sure that we continue to be dialed in from a defensive point of view.
Larry, how much of the turnovers that you've had recently are in the relation to that changing the roles and trying to get everybody on the same page, as opposed to last year, DeLon was kind of the guy that handled the ball. Now you've got a couple of guys who are trying to do different things. Is that part of it, or is it just kind of a...
Well, certainly that's a percentage of it. You know, just before I came down here, I had asked our staff to break down the 19 turnovers, because it's one thing to say we had 19 turnovers, but let's figure out how they happened, you know. And I know in the Wichita State game and in the Duke game, there's three or four illegal screens because we're trying to get a teammate open and we get called for an illegal screen. Now, whether it is a legal screen or not, I thought there were a number of times where we went, set a great screen, the defense ran into us, which is kind of the reason you set a screen. But I'm starting to wonder if we need to start coaching that, where you run into a screen, you snap your head back, and then the official assumes that it was an illegal screen because it was too physical. That's kind of where we've been with those two marquee games that we've been in. And, you know, that's for, not only are they turnovers, but they put Bricott on the bench in the Wichita State game, which has an impact. You know, we had, I think, three travels. There was only one turnover. Then I told the guys at halftime, even though we weren't pleased with our turnover total, there was only one turnover where we threw it to them and they scored. And you can look at stats that say points after turnovers, but I didn't realize this, but apparently if it's the next possession after you turn it over, they score, it's considered points off a turnover. That's a different type of turnover than traveling, then you set your defense. And if they score on you, that's one thing. But the ones you can't defend, the turnovers you can't defend, are the ones that are problematic. The one we threw to Ingram and he dunked it. And not only that, but it typically creates a little bit of momentum going the other way. So that's what we're trying to figure out. How do we eliminate them? How do we clean them up? We need to figure out just exactly how they took place. We haven't broke it down yet.
Last year it seemed like Arizona and Utah were two teams that were kind of destined to meet up in the Pac-12 championship, or kind of the better teams looking into it. This year it seems like the Pac-12 is a little more of a, you know, anybody can play, anybody can do things. What is your look at the Pac-12 as you move forward towards that?
To be honest with you, I've watched very little Pac-12 basketball. I'm not a basketball junkie per se, that when I am in the fact that I watch a bunch of our games, or, you know, I don't know how many Duke games I watched prior to that game. So I don't find myself having time to watch a game socially. I'll go through, the ticker and look at some stat sheets. But beyond that, I'm seeing a lot of wins. I'm seeing the fact that I feel pretty good about where we are, and yet I think we're fifth or sixth in the conference win percentage. So that means there's a lot of people that are winning games. But I really don't... truthfully have an assessment until we get into getting through this game tomorrow night. That's when I'll have 4 days, a little recovery time, and that's when we'll start going through the, you know, the at least the Bay Area teams, the Stanford and the Cal, so we can get up to speed on those squads. But I'd say it's fair to say that it's fairly wide open, super competitive. There's not any off nights, and you know, a lot of different styles of play and some places that are rejuvenated. And again, it's just the first season, and then when league starts, that's the real one. So we got to be ready to go.
Going back to Jace, what kind of player is he? What can he bring to the team if he does play, or if he doesn't until next year? Then at that point.
Well, number one, he's 7 feet tall. Works extremely hard. There's a lot of 7-footers running around, but I truly think there's a lot of them that have kind of been playing basketball because. Kind of the same thing I run into in every elevator. Somebody sees me at 6'10 and goes, oh, you must have played basketball. And I think, you know, with the height, there's a lot of people that have the height, but maybe not the mental dedication and love of the game. He loves it. And he's as physical. I've never seen, honestly, a 7-footer get on the floor as often as he does for loose balls. He runs extremely well, gets up and down the floor, unlike a lot of 7-footers. A little bit like Jakob in the fact that he's not a selfish low post player, but I've seen him the last couple of years make great passes when he gets double teamed or when the opportunity arises, and he's a solid back to the basket post player, you know, and solid defender. So you know, I think you can assess a guy all you want through their high school and AAU program, and we can talk about it all we want, but I think he's as excited to get here and get started as we are to find out, you know, because you want to get those kids that you can say, man, he adjusted faster than we thought, or he was a little better than we thought. And probably first and foremost, though, is he's a high character kid. He's one of the kind of kids that we like to recruit, that's solid, you know, family wise, what he's all about, and you know, let the journey begin.
In the offseason, Jakob obviously had a difficult decision on whether to go to the NBA, and I don't think many would have blamed him for going. But the transition that he's made this year into who he's become, I mean, what are you seeing as a coach, and how proud are you to see him take that next step and maybe even improve his NBA stock for next year?
Well, I think, you know, first off, what makes it a little unique is that most kids after their freshman year that are pretty much guaranteed to be picked in the first round don't come back to college. So you kind of quit talking about them, you know, and it's that emotional time. I think college basketball season's over in March. The season comes to a screeching halt. Maybe you've been in the limelight as we were a year ago. And then when it ends, it's human nature. There's two things that are in the news, and it's the hiring and firing of coaches is one of the hot topics on the ESPN college basketball ticker, and who's going into the draft. And I think there's an awful lot of kids that make a mistake and fantasize and maybe think about, and I'm not saying that kids make that decision because they want to have their name in the news, but it's just bad timing. And so for him to come back, put it in more of a realistic, you know, time capsule to where flash forward to what it feels like now, as opposed to being on a D-League bus and not knowing if the strength and conditioning coach is going to be there with you all the time or what's going on in your practice setting. And I think Jakob was confident that he knew what he was going to get out of coming back, that there was a lot of known entities and factors. But what I think gets forgotten is, you know, back in the good old days before everybody went one and done, typically, there were a large percentage of players that after their freshman to sophomore year would be the time period where you'd see a big jump. And you don't see that anymore because the kids that are worth watching as freshmen are gone. So this is kind of one of those examples, like maybe the time's gone past where, okay, let's stick around for a sophomore year. And as I told Jakob, let's say you don't get any stronger, your game doesn't improve, we do a terrible job of coaching you, everything remains the same. How much better are you going to be just knowing what you know and not be that freshman from Austria, you know? And I think coming back and being acclimated and being a little more certain of your environment automatically leads to some improvements. And then when you combine that, some confidence, and then when we address the things that we've addressed, you know, as a basketball player, and he's bought into them and accomplished them, then some good things can happen.